Welcome to the conference. Please note today's call is being recorded. Please stand by.
Hello, everyone. This is Reva Winkler at the National Quality Forum. Thank you all for joining us today as we have a meeting of the eMeasure Feasibility Technical Expert Panel. The purpose of this call is for the panel members to review the comments that were submitted on the draft report that was posted for public comment last month. We are looking to get feedback and comment and responses from the panel members to the many public comments that were submitted. We received more than 90 comments from 10 different organizations. As you could tell as we were signing in, we do have audience members who are here joining us. There will be an opportunity for public comment later in the call. For the committee members, you received two documents that are the main materials for this call. The first is an Excel spreadsheet which contains every one of the comments that were submitted. This is a sortable spreadsheet so that you can sort it by who submitted the comment or by topic area or whatever else you may have wanted to sort it by. Just so everyone's aware that after discussion with the panel and consideration of all the comments, we will be entering a response to each and every one of those comments in the spreadsheet and posting the final result on our website with a response to each comment. So that is sort of a final product of the effort we're beginning today. In addition, there is a memo that outlines the comments and groups them by topic area to facilitate this morning's discussion. Both of those documents are posted on NQF's website. So before I turn it over to Dr. Lieberman to begin the discussion, I just want to remind the panel that what we're really looking for you from you today is a discussion in response to the comments. The comments address a wide variety of subjects, some of them very specific to the recommendations that you have made. We're looking for your thoughts on whether you wish to make any adjustments to your recommendations, any clarifications. Do we need to explain or be more explicit at any point in the report in response to the comments? Some of the comments I think are very specific that will be addressed by NQF staff, those specifically addressing formatting or organization of the report or things like that. But those that are specific to the recommendations made by the TEP, it's very important that we have your input and your thoughts on how you want to respond to these comments. So are there any questions from the panel members in terms of what we need to do on this call today? All right. Then Dr. Lieberman?
All right, thanks,
Reva.
Sure.
Yeah,
that, let me see, I'm still working on getting into the WebEx. I'm very close. Let me do that. And then what I thought we would do is go through we would start with the comments regarding the recommendations because that's kind of the meat of the paper that we're producing. And we have a little less than 2 hours to get through them, and there are a lot of comments. I wanted to make sure that we got through those first, and then we can circle back and go through some of the more general ones. And as Reva mentioned, really what we're looking to do is decide, whether or not we agree or disagree with the comment, and then whether we want to make a change to the recommendation based on the comment. Let's get started by, actually it would be on page 3 of the comment memo, the recommendation 1, which is the assess feasibility throughout e-measurement development. And if you want to, the actual recommendation was that feasibility should be considered early in the e-measure development process and assessed throughout the entire duration of measure development as an agile iterative process. Greater collaboration among measure developers, EHR vendors, and providers at all stages of development would promote more rapid evolution in EHR functionality for current measures as well as to build the capability for more complex EHR-enabled e-measures in the future.
Say, Mike, do you mind telling us where you're reading from, or where are you? How do we?
Okay. So I read that just from the draft report. I was going to work from two different documents. The draft report has the actual text that people are commenting on, and then the memo document has the actual recommendations.
So can you refer us to the page number of one of these documents so we can follow along?
Yes. So the in the draft report, it's page 8, recommendation 1.
Paul, this is Riva. There's a link on the page 1 of the memo to the draft report if you don't have it otherwise available.
And also, I think it was sent out this morning right before the call.
Oh, this morning. Okay. Okay. That explains it.
So, and Riva, I assume that you'll then be taking notes and getting with the conversation? Okay.
Yes, and as a reminder to everyone, we are recording this call, so we'll have that for reference as well.
Okay. Okay. So should we jump into the first recommendation then, which is, or the comment, collaborations require. Now, and on the WebEx, Riva, who is driving that, and do they want to pull up the memo on that?
Hi, this is Katie. I'm running the WebEx. Right now I'm having a problem with screen sharing, but I have help on the way.
Okay.
In the meantime, I do have links to all of the materials on the WebEx, but once that is fixed, I'll try to show what you're referencing as we go along.
Okay. So then, again, we were going to go through the PDF memo that Riva put together just because they've kind of she's collected the comments by recommendation, so we thought that would be a good way to do it. So again, on the comments PDF, it's page 3, and under recommendation 1, assess feasibility throughout e-measure development, we have collaborations require active and ongoing communication with stakeholders as well as additional time and resources during the measure development process. Obtaining feedback multiple times may increase the amount of time needed at the beginning of the process to send requests for feedback, communicate with stakeholders, analyze feedback, and integrate suggestions into the measure specifications. Although we agree that earlier identification of infeasible measures will be more efficient in the long run, these additional steps may impact the timeline for measure development.
This is Carrie Christensen from the AMA PCPI. Do you want us to just jump in if we've got comments on this? Or?
Yes, please do.
Okay. So I will just share that from the HHS-led Kaizen work that we started about, 3 or 4 weeks ago now, around measure development and making that process more lean, we actually determined that this kind of work earlier in the process we felt would actually cut out time because there won't be the same number of rework loops. So although I agree that it does add work up front in the process, I still think we should recommend that work be done earlier in the process to be consistent with the work coming out of that lean event.
Great.
This is Debbie. I agree.
Yep.
This is Debbie Krause. I agree with what Carrie's just said. I was going to say the same thing.
And this is Luke Matisse with the Joint Commission. Ditto.
So, and this is Paul. So since the measure developers are all agreeing, I would definitely support their notion. I mean, it's the rework that causes a complete restart, reset. I think if there's anything, one of the things we've learned from both this process and the e-measure collaborative is a hearty exchange at the beginning just prevents so many more false starts.
Okay, great. Okay, so let's move on to the next recommendation. This approach is focused on measures as the root of the issue, while the fundamental underlying problem is the lack of semantic interoperability to enhance clinical care, care coordination, clinical decision support, and measurement. It is important that the recommendations for e-measure development also impact data usage within and among EHRs to enhance clinical care. Any comments on that?
Well, okay. I think the measures can be inappropriate or improperly constructed measures can cause a lot of distraction in terms of the efforts on the part of providers. So I think that's sort of where we're headed. I mean, that was our intent of this work group, which is if the measures are put together with a lot of information, a lot of collaboration up front, then it will be much more meaningful and much more efficient at the back end. And I think in the end, that rewards the providers who have to both do the work and as well as measure it.
Yeah. And it seems to me that the e-measure system is really does actually help with semantic interoperability. So I don't quite understand what the comment is trying to get at.
Do we have a reference to who made that? Because then we could know the background, maybe better understand the background. Because sometimes the intent is there, and we're just not able to read it. Do you know where this came
It would take
from?
A little bit of time, Paul, but you can find all of the comments over on the spreadsheet.
I think I already know who made that. That was from the gentleman from the American Board of Internal Medicine. Was that one of the? Oh, the American College of Physicians.
Sorry, it's the ACB. ACB.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we need any other discussion on this one, or should we move on? Let's move on. Okay.
I think when you read the actual sort of comment, it appeared that they were trying to broaden the scope in terms of semantic interoperability helping clinical decision support and in many other areas of, care delivery. That's sort of the gist of what I got from the actual comment itself.
Okay.
But I don't know if it fits into the feasibility of just e-measures.
Right, and I definitely don't think it would change the recommendation. If anything, it might be something that we would want to place in a comment in kind of the introductory area where we're – because I think that is one of the not so much around e-measure feasibility, but e-measure altogether is trying to enhance the use of data for both measurement and decision support. The next one is, add the inclusion of NLM vocabulary experts in the early stages. Requests for new codes from NLM and its supported standards have been made at the tail end of the process. These requests are the canary in the coal mine for signaling problems with feasibility. If there's not an existing code, the data would never be in a current computer record.
And that came from Clem McDonald.
This is Carrie Christensen. Again, that's consistent with the recommendations coming out of the Lean event. I think that'd be worthwhile. I don't know where it fits in the paper, though. That's my only concern.
Well, we could add that we have greater collaboration among measure developers, EHR vendors, and providers. We don't make any reference to vocabulary bodies. Should we add that? I think it would be reasonable.
Fair point.
So I wonder if we, in our recommendation about the collaboration at the front end, if we both enumerate the kinds of stakeholders we're interested in and the process for this iterative feedback, we might be addressing a lot of these comments at the same time. And also that's probably one of our biggest recommendations.
Hi, this is Shannon. I think I agree with everything that's being said. I don't really know that it necessarily needs to be an NLM expert per se, but just a vocabulary person in general. Cautious that the existence of a code and a standardized vocabulary doesn't necessarily translate to automatic feasibility within an EHR. So I think clearly if there's not a code, it's bad, but the fact that there is a code doesn't mean it's good either. So
Shannon, this is Zahid. I agree with you, but I think that Clem's comment was specifically directed at the need for new elements or new code sets. And that would.
I think this is Debbie Krass. I think keeping it general, including the stakeholder terminology expert at the beginning, where we explain that collaboration early and often is good. And if it doesn't have a code, it just signals that we may need to request it, and it may be an issue, but it shouldn't stop us from pursuing the measure development. So I would not think we would want to get into the details of their the end of the comment where they talk about if there's no existing code. Yeah, they're not capturing it currently, but it doesn't preclude us from capturing it in the near future.
So I think there's two, this is Paul, there's two aspects to the suggestion. One is explicitly including vocabulary experts in the process, but two is explicitly including NLM since they're the curator of the vocabulary. So it works both ways in the sense of if you want, one, they would know what's in it, and two, they would have an influence over the work to be done. So it's sort of both things are helpful.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, what I'm struggling with a little bit is whether the comment is trying to get at, I mean, I think involving terminology, people familiar with terminology early in the process is a very good idea, but it's, you know, doesn't really need to be it doesn't need to be the NLM or for that matter, you know, the SNOMED folks, if it's a SNOMED folk, or is it more that, you know, as you're developing measures, whether or not you really need a code, and in some ways, whether that code should exist is part of the question as well. But I think I think having the comment that you want terminology specialists involved early in the process is good. But then again, I actually don't know how you necessarily operationalize that. Paul, you had kind of mentioned the process for that as well, and do you have any ideas about how that process would work?
Mike, this is Ruth with the Joint Commission. I think what you've just said makes a lot of sense. There's actually two aspects to terminology expertise in the e-measure development process. The first one is as a user or an expert user of the vocabulary, making sure that we're using existing codes that are the right codes and appropriate codes and for the representation of a particular concept. And then there's the editor, I would say the vocabulary editor piece, in which if there is no appropriate code, then when a new code needs to be requested, we need to make sure that it fits in with the vocabulary. And that's, I guess, where I see the preponderant role for the NLM. At least for SNOMED, they would be the brokers for that.
Okay. All right, any other comments on this one, or should we? All right, let's go ahead and move on then. The next one is recommend that developers map to the QDM and codes early on to allow for time to request new codes if necessary. I mean, I would have assumed that that is already kind of the process. Is that not the case?
I think it is part of the process and probably doesn't need to be specified by us.
Well, I think maybe what the comment, and the measure developers can let us know, is a measure definition can proceed far along just on concepts alone, and then at the end they say, oh, we don't have a standard code for that, and then end up having to request it at the very end. These two comments seem to say that. So if that's true, then their suggestion is that you involve people with vocabulary expertise early on, and one of the ways to do that is to check to make sure the concepts you're asking for are in the QDM.
And this is Ruth. I'm just not sure how this relates directly to feasibility. It seems more of a process comment in terms of the efficiency or the order in which the steps are performed.
This is Carrie. I agree. I think it's true, and it's a good point, but let's maybe let the lean process work cover it instead of this work.
What's the output of the lean process that would affect, that would get back to the measure developers?
One of the deliverables is a standardized testing plan for testing at all points in measure development. So that guidance would be given in that. And it is covered. I'm just not sure where it fits. I agree that there's just not really a section of specific things we think measure developers should start doing.
And it's also covered in a number of the other processes that closely align or overlap with the testing. So it is covered, maybe data elements, e-spec creation, one of those two processes.
Yeah, well, as most of this actually refers to kind of e-measure data element feasibility, if we're saying that that needs to occur early on in the process, then we are saying that that they need to be mapped to QDM and standard code sets early in the process to know, you know, whether they can be. All right, I think we're ready to move on to recommendation number two.
I would like to make some comments about recommendation number one.
Sure.
I think they're somewhat related. It's Howard from EPIC. Recommendation number one is really a process recommendation. And at the end of the process, it says, it mentions one goal of feasibility measurement, which is the rapid evolution in EHR functionality. But really, our document does not have a section that lists the goals of feasibility measurement, which I think is a deficiency. And I think really what this recommendation should say is we recommend this process in order to achieve the goals of feasibility assessment, rather than what it says now, which is that we recommend a certain process and it only highlights one goal. Of course, another goal could be the measure is set aside because it's determined by provider feedback or other feedback that it's not feasible at this time and it should not be endorsed. So right now it just calls out rapid evolution of EHR functionality. What I would like to see it say is it achieves the goals of measure feasibility assessment, and then in a separate section, which should be at the beginning, we also add what all of the goals of the assessment should be.
Howard, this is Reva. Aside from the two you mentioned, are there other goals that you have in mind?
Well, I think in general, we do mention a goal in our overarching principles. We say the fundamental goal of performance measurement, improve the quality of care. Our goals are to provide the users of the product with the ability to generate data for their own purposes, for their own quality improvement measure efforts. Another goal of the assessment process is basically to endorse a measure and say this measure is feasible at this time, so it's ready to go. And I agree that promoting new functionality in EHR vendors is another goal. I think others can come up with more, but I think there's several that we could call. I mean, at least even if we have a limited number of goals, we should call them out.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can do that.
No, Howard, I like that idea a lot. And another goal that I would have for feasibility assessment is, and I think it's listed somewhere in the introductory area as well, but it's to expose issues with feasibility early on in the process and throughout the process. As we kind of discussed earlier, people may choose to use a measure that is, you know, less feasible than another measure if they feel there's enough value at it. But we want people to have the information necessary to appreciate the problems with a measure or with the issues with the feasibility throughout the process.
Right. So I would like to see recommendation one say more about here's the process we recommend, and the end result is that our goals are achieved without linking a specific goal to this process, because it really should benefit all goals.
So this is Paul. I agree with the multiple goals. I'm there. One of the things we are, one of the problems we are trying to solve, and I don't want it to get lost, is we're not looking to stay stuck in the past or with the current systems. So I think the reason that the phrase for rapid evolution in the HR functionality is because we want the HR vendors to try to go towards the future needs. It's one of the very loud voices about the current state of affairs is that people are not happy with the measures or the ability to implement the measures. So we're trying to go towards a new world.
I agree with that. Go ahead.
I don't want to water down that message.
Well, I think that message should be in an overarching principle. That should be one of the principles.
Okay. Howard, I've got noted that, and I'll be happy to revise things along those lines.
Okay, so for recommendation number two, framework for e-measure feasibility assessment, says the TEP agreed that a framework for assessing e-measure feasibility would provide a common language and provide decision makers with valuable information about the technical feasibility of e-measures. Building on the work from the HITEP 1 report, this proposed framework addressed assessment of technical feasibility of data collection only and does not address the value of the data element or e-measure. Assessment of the feasibility of data elements while a measure is being conceptualized and specified can identify significant feasibility issues before the measure is field tested. A feasibility assessment should address both the data elements and subsequently the measure logic aggregation and reporting. And then the comment was to promote an open dialogue between all stakeholders and allow for greater flexibility, this report should outline the standards and types of questions for feasibility assessment rather than outlining a prescriptive approach to obtaining answers to those questions. Such guidance would better support the identification and discussion of the obstacles to feasibility than a potentially gameable scoring system. Comments about the comment? So I think that, I mean, I guess I would, I think that the, that we want to, that what we're trying to do is give people more of a framework to do feasibility, and I don't think we're entirely prescriptive about how this should be done. And the gameable scoring system is kind of another issue that probably warrants some discussion. In that, some of the later comments talk about how this is used in promoting a measure and so on, But overall, for this comment, I feel like we do need to give some framework and some more structured format to do the assessment, but still have it be in the spirit of doing exactly what they say, promoting an open dialogue. Anybody else have a comment? Anybody agree or disagree with the comment that the commenter made?
This is Ruth. Yes. Is would it be allowable for a measure developer to use a tool other than the scorecard to answer the same questions? And I guess then we need to better formulate the questions that we're trying to answer in the scorecard, so that we would allow for different approaches to answering those questions. I'm not sure it's clear from the report right now that this scorecard is a suggestion rather than a requirement.
Well, are we, and it's a little bit like standards. If you have a lot of optionality, then you don't have a standard. I think NQF does need a standard, just like its criteria set. And it's fine for people to develop things and have different attributes that they want to measure for their own purposes. But in the end, there has to be something that they even know how they're going to be met, how they're going to be assessed.
So this is Zahid. I think I think Hoot made a good point that if you even look at the subsequent comments, it appears that people feel that this will be a mandated tool, which is not the intent, as Mike just mentioned. I think this is providing a more of a framework, but not just totally sort of without any structure. So it's more of a structured framework within which people can use this to develop tools as they see fit to actually implement it. So perhaps some clarification of that, if that is the intent and if everybody agrees on the TEP, that this is a framework that's just sort of a structure within which tools could be developed to actually operationalize this framework. If that is the intent and that is what we're trying to convey, then perhaps, you know, making it clear along those lines might be helpful.
What's the need? Could NQF maybe speak to the need here? What would be of use?
I think, you know, NQF has the criteria to evaluate all measures for feasibility. E-measures have their specific characteristics and issues around feasibility. I think we're trying to identify some greater guidance about what kind of information will provide stakeholders, implementers, all sorts of end users with some way of assessing a measure's characteristics around feasibility. It's certainly a subject that has been brought up, and we get feedback all the time about, you know, greater assessment, greater testing for feasibility. We need to know more about feasibility and how this will work to better understand how realistic this measure will be for implementation. And certainly that kind of information, when a measure is being evaluated for endorsement, will speak to the criteria for feasibility. So feasibility has never been a required must-pass or have any kind of absolute threshold associated with it, but the guidance to help both the stakeholders understand feasibility of a measure as well as how to and have expectations for implementation down the road. So, you know, we are looking for a little bit greater guidance specific to e-measures that will help all the stakeholders understand as measures e-measures come through.
Yeah, and just to add to that, this is Helen. Thanks, Reva. The other piece is increasingly as e-measures are moving into being used for major accountability programs, there are concerns about how feasible these measures will be, and the particularly the you know, issues around the validity of the reliability and validity of the measure results. So I think being able to provide this information on the, you know, ability to at least capture the data is a really important input to a multi-stakeholder group as they consider measures.
It sounds like the more precise we can be, the more helpful it is. It goes again to standards. When you give a whole lot of optionality, it just becomes less helpful. So we may have to better explain or potentially even revise these categories, availability, accuracy, standards. But are we saying we don't agree with having these listed?
No, so it sounds like what we want to say is that an assessment using this framework is required, but there's no absolute, you know, scoring system, or there's no absolute pass-fail associated with it. So it's not that you have to meet a certain threshold in order for the measure to move along, but you do need to provide that information so that it's easily accessible for people, you know, during the evaluation of the measure in the endorsement process, and then even past that in the, you know, whether or not you want to use a measure for a particular program.
And these are suggested attributes that some groups have found useful.
Well, I think as you were just pointing out, I think we could still make the assessment using this scorecard required for all data elements, and then have the report, you know, as we discuss on those data elements, a required part of the measure and the measure submission process.
I think that's where we're headed, right? I think that would be useful.
Yeah.
This is Debbie Krauss from CMS. I just caution, though, requiring a scorecard to be produced for all the data elements, because you don't want to have any rework. We have many data elements that we've already used that have passed feasibility and we're implementing. And so we don't want to do rework of them just to fill out a scorecard as new measures come along. And we want to stand up a framework and I think state that you'll have to give explanation of how you assess the feasibility, and here's the recommended framework to assess it as you take the measure forward for use and endorsement. So I'm a little concerned that we require a scorecard.
Yeah, Debbie, this is Helen. Just a brief response, and that's a great question. And we already have built into our criteria, if there's evidence out there that a data element is already determined to be reliable and valid, then that can just be put forward. And maybe we just need to be more explicit here that, you know, as long as there's some evidence that somebody can put forward that, you know, of the, you know, 11 data elements in this measure, you know, prior analyses, you know, and point to where that analysis might be, would suggest those are, you know, can be reliably and feasibly can be collected, then, you know, we could ask them just to focus on the ones that for which we don't have that prior information.
And, in fact, the information, quote, the scorecard on existing data elements could exist in the QDM. That was one of its original purposes.
Yeah.
And what you'd have, then you'd actually encourage behavior that you may be looking for, which is, wow, these things that are readily available, reliable, and authoritative, why don't I just use that? And voila, you'd be reusing things that exist and then offer some comparability. That was sort of part of the thoughts behind the QDM.
But this is Howard from Epic. Also, part of the feasibility assessment is not just evaluating a data element in isolation. It's evaluating it in the context of the measure. So I agree that you may have data elements that are already vetted and judged to be feasible, but in a certain context, they may be problematic. And this is a communication mechanism to convey to the developer that there may be a problem. I mean, I have to say, I just yesterday on the CMS website raised an issue about the feasibility of a very established data element that just does not appear to work in a certain context.
Could you possibly share that? It would just be helpful. I'm not sure I can wrap my head around the context issue or just the general example.
Oh, the general example was were you asking me, Helen?
Yeah, please, yeah.
The general example was the principal diagnosis, which is a, you know, diagnosis is a very standard data element. Principal diagnosis, you understand where that comes from. But in the CMS, I forgot what they're called, the notes that were sent out recently.
The release notes or the logic document?
The guidance document.
Logic guidance.
It basically said that the principal diagnosis from an inpatient encounter is basically the diagnosis that it appears on the billing statement that's coded as, well, it's flagged as the principal diagnosis. And, of course, diagnosis has an attribute of a start time and a stop time, mm-hmm. start time and an end time. But a billing statement just includes a diagnosis and a flag. It does not have any start or stop time. So if we specify that the principal diagnosis is the diagnosis from the billing statement, we can't then say that it has an attribute of a start and end time and then design a measure saying, if a diagnosis started on a certain date, then that defines the denominator.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Okay, so we have. So I think that we decided that the scorecard would be useful, especially, or maybe. You know, one of the options for describing the feasibility of a data element and other options might be, you know, evidence of, of prior use and validity. Okay, and then so now we're going to move on to 2.1, which is the data element feasibility assessment, and I don't think I'm going to read the entire section because there's a little too much here. So let's jump into the comments, and then if we need to go back and figure out what part exactly they're commenting on, we can try to do that. So the first comment is, it is unclear how the scorecard will be used to drive meaningful use of EHR. The potential negative consequence of this tool may be the development of e-measures that are possible rather than e-measures that could be possible. And, you know, I think that we addressed that by saying that we were going to do the feasibility assessment both with regard to what is out there now as well as what has been specified in meaningful use criteria and so on. Does anybody else have a comment on that?
It's Howard from Epic. During our discussion in the in-person meeting, I think we did say, and everyone agreed with the idea that a low feasibility rating does not mean that a measure cannot go forward. It is just one factor among many that need to be considered, and it is not the dominant factor, nor do we have a threshold below which you cannot go forward with the measure. And I think that addresses this point. Or we should, if we don't say it in the document, we should.
This is Kevin Larson. My personal goal for this is that we make intentional choices about those attributes and measures that we want to have as stretch goals rather than accidentally stumbling on things that are really difficult to do and they don't, they're not really moving us forward or driving a lot of value. We just invest a lot of energy in doing something that's hard.
And the other thing is, don't we still have the column of 3 to 5 years?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, that was sort of our intent of it could be made possible.
Right. Okay. The next comment, the use of prescriptive and standardized process does not allow measure developers and their partners to tailor the feasibility assessment approach to their needs, nor does it encourage innovation and advancement within the field. Listing separate from the scorecards the important components of data element feasibility that must be considered in modifying the scorecard description and instructions to indicate that the resource is a tool and its use optional is recommended. A rating system such as the one proposed in this is subjective and could be gamed through the purposeful selection of more technically advanced or aligned EHR systems in the assessment process. I think we've kind of already discussed this issue in our initial discussion. Are there any other comments about this? All right, I'll move on to the next comment. It is unclear which entity would complete the scorecard, EHR vendor, measure developer, how that entity would complete the scorecard, and how the process for completing the scorecard would be operationalized. Since the scorecard proposed within the report would only apply to one data element, we are concerned that the process for completing the assessment would be highly labor-intensive.
Well, this is Paul. Just a comment about this comment. The two choices they gave are, I think, are a little bit off, at least what I think we were headed towards. The entity that would, quote, complete the scorecard, I think should be more from the perspective of either of the user rather than the EHR vendor or mesh developer, because I think that's where the workflow and what does this data element actually mean comes into play.
This is Carrie from the MAPCPI. I'll build on that. I might disagree slightly in that I feel like the measure developer is responsible for getting the scorecard completed, but yes, it obviously needs to be in collaboration with vendors and actual providers with EHRs, and you can't just do that in a vacuum. So maybe we could just clarify that.
Sure.
And maybe the overall theme here with, I think, our whole body of work is this collaboration is important because of the various the experience and knowledge that each perspective has. We'll have a far better product if they start, if they're all, let's say three, these two and plus the clinician user, are involved from almost from start to finish. And the finish in this sense is the scorecard. So maybe that's a theme we could strike, we could make more explicit. Yeah. And this is just yet another way of showing how that would work.
Okay, Paul, this is Reva. We can certainly make that more clear in the report.
This is Howard from EPIC. I do think that there's a couple of small changes that can be made to address this comment. We do want to convey the idea that a number of different types of entities can complete the data, the feasibility assessment, and yet in our data availability paragraph, we say the EHR vendors can determine how often data is captured. But really, it's the whoever is doing the assessment is who's doing it, not necessarily an EHR vendor. That's one of the possible entities. Yeah. Also, in the first sentence, we say the extent to which data is readily available in a structured format across EHR systems. But really, any feasibility assessment is any one feasibility assessment is really only likely to address one EHR system. So while the overall combination of feasibility assessments would likely span more than one, really any given assessment is only going to look at one.
Well, actually, this is Debbie. Actually, when we did feasibility on data elements, we did work with multiple vendors on the same data elements, so we did look at multiple systems for the same data elements. So I imagine that they're different. Developers may do it different ways, but we felt in order to get a large picture, that was important to do.
And this is
that's valid.
But if your point is that you're going to do individual assessments and then or the measure developer will do individual assessments with multiple systems, multiple providers perhaps, and then aggregate the findings into one scorecard for that data element. And that goes back to my point that we discussed on the draft report prior to its release, which is that the scorecard should be able to work for a single assessment as well, so that there is some standardization in the individual assessments, and then there must be some sort of way in which we can aggregate that, but that the assessments, I agree with you, Howard, that the individual assessments need to get to the aggregate findings.
So it seems like in general, the consensus is that the measure developer ultimately is going to be the one that is responsible for the feasibility assessment of the measure, and in collaboration with EHR developers and clinicians and the users. Is it worth, so Reva, is that what you said you were going to specifically call out earlier in the draft?
Sure, we can do that.
This is Kevin. One addition to that is that the National Library of Medicine is interested in figuring out how they can also help with the feasibility at the data element level and potentially even store some of that information in the Value Set Authority Center. So they have been engaged and a willing partner in this, so that if it's done in one context or one measure, it could potentially be, that information could be leveraged for other measures in other contexts.
I think that's great. I think the context issue is a really important one there. So it would be useful to have kind of that repository and those scores for a data element, but then I think we would also need the ability to comment or somehow assess the application of that assessment to the particular measure. I think as Howard was mentioning, I'm not sure if it's the exact same sort of issue, but where a measure may be feasible a data element may be very feasible in one measure the way that it's used. It may be less so in another. And I think we talked about, I don't remember exactly which it was if it was vital signs or temperatures during the labor process that they were collected, you know, many times. And whereas it may be a feasible data element in as being collected once, when you collect it a lot of times, it's going to be less feasible. So you'd want to have some way of kind of capturing the perhaps the measure specific issues with that data element as well. All right, ready to move on to the next one then. Ideally, assessment should be performed by clinicians using EHR systems today rather than vendors. It is important to differentiate from fields vendors make available and actual data capture. I think that we all, from the previous discussion, I think we all agree with that.
So I think, Mike, this is Ahid. I think we agreed that it should be vendors and their clinicians. Right?
Yes, collaboration with both.
Clinicians, right? And not vendors.
Yeah.
So ideally it should be the two of them together.
Okay. Okay. And then the next is, it would not be appropriate to expect all measure developers to obtain a representative sample of EHR implementation due both to the great variability in EHR systems and the burden placed on the vendor community. In addition, feasibility assessment efforts under federal contracts often are subject to abbreviated measure development schedules and constrained by Paper Work Reduction Act regulations on data collection. And I think, I mean, this gets at the larger question of, you know, what is an adequate sample to do feasibility assessment?
This is Carrie. Oh, go ahead, Ruth.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we're not prescriptive in reliability testing as to exactly what needs to be done. More is better. And I don't think we'd want to be more prescriptive for feasibility than we'd want to be for reliability.
And I completely agree with that statement, Carrie. This is Hutz. I would add to that we already had some discussion about the key factor being transparency. So when presenting feasibility or reliability results, that there is transparency in the number of sites, the number of EHR vendors, that because that will frame the constraints and limitations of the testing results.
This is Howard from EPIC. If I could draw our attention on page 7, there's actually a specific recommendation where we apparently prescribe the number of systems that should be reviewed or assessed, and there's the commenter raises objections based on the OMB requirements that would entail. So that's, I think it's directly related to this point.
And which, so we should, Howard, which,
this
which
is on page 7. If you just click, if you just skip to page 7, and
of the comments document.
Yeah, and this the document that you're in.
Yeah. Okay.
And you look right where it says, down about the middle of the page, it says remove the recommendation that steering committees consider assessments of fewer than 3
right.
EHR systems and 10 installations is insufficient.
I don't remember that we agreed on a number of sufficient installations at all.
Yeah, especially 10, because 10 is more than 9, and 9 is the limit. So we've got to make sure that we're not recommending something that the government contracts can't do.
Yeah, this was a conversation that you all had on the conference call we had in early January, where you were talking about what you thought would be a sufficient. You were hesitant to make a threshold, but felt that there needed to be some recommendation around where you thought meaningful information would be obtained.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fair. This is Carrie. I mean, this is what we do. In operation, we try to get 3 EHR systems, and more installations is better. Typically, that's somewhere between 5 and 9. But, yeah, I'm uncomfortable with even making a recommendation that's specific, because then that sounds like that's all you have to do, and that you have to do that many, and I'm uncomfortable with both sides of that.
So this is with the Joint Commission. I completely agree.
So wait, so are you saying you're uncomfortable? You want to go back on our number three?
We're not specifically say three.
I mean, we did, as Reva pointed out, we did come up with a number three, and are we no longer in agreement with that?
I'm sorry, I'm confused now. I'm looking at 10, not 3.
Well,
no,
3 EHR
systems,
10 installations, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I see that now.
So
the sentence that it applies to.
If I understand, and Carrie, you can maybe clarify, it's the 10 that's the issue, 10 installations and not the 3 EHRs.
I don't actually remember 10, but that may be my fault, but I do remember 3.
Yeah.
Like,
I'll just read the sentence that this
EHRs
applies to.
And we felt that it should be at least a certain number of installations that should also be important. Or
yes.
That would
well,
be important. So
this gets
Carrie,
back.
This is an issue in terms of the OMB that it's 5 to 9 installations.
You can't do more than 9 of anything.
Could we say that it is recommended that a minimum of 9, that would get out of that.
No, I'm super uncomfortable with that, and
yeah.
I think it gets back to our definition of feasibility.
Right.
If we have to find 9 places that can
yeah.
do this, that's incredibly expensive, as well
yeah.
as,
okay.
For some measures it just may not be possible. And I'm thinking the cutting edge measures, so like what we're doing with functional status assessment. If I have to find 9, there's maybe 9 places in the country that are doing that.
Sure,
we can never have a measure around it. So, I think it's good to say a variety of EHR systems is desirable. The more installations you can assess, the better. But to set a hard number is gonna limit the types of measures that we can do that I think we want as a country. And I wouldn't want to have that be the outcome of this report.
Sure.
Yeah, would that count to 3?
Well, I think we could say... Could say a variety, like you said, a variety of EHR vendors might be, that's obviously more than one.
Preferably with multiple implementations.
Yeah, and I would say, like, and ideally with multiple implementations, but I don't know that we even need, realizing that that at times you may only have one implementation of an EHR. But again,
it
back to the
possible with multiple implementations.
And I guess this is good. I guess it goes back to the point of whether we're trying to convey what's desirable and ideal versus hard minimum requirements. And my perception of our discussion in general in January was that these were more of a guidance element than a requirement for feasibility. And going
right.
back to Carrie's point earlier, since we don't have these requirements for reliability, I don't see why it exists for feasibility.
Yeah. I think one question that we could, try to answer is that there is, it sounds like, Paul, you're still in favor of having a specific recommendation around a number and saying 3 EHR systems, and others want to keep that more, don't want to put a specific number in. Are there any other comments around anybody else?
Well, let me see if Carrie agrees about 3, but no defined number of installations, because I certainly understand that point.
I would not want to recommend that we say that no measure can move into, the national forefront if only 2 EHR vendors are currently able to do it. We all know that EHR vendors respond to measures who are endorsed, and it's putting the requirement on the measure developer to get EHR vendors to pick up a measure before being able to ask for endorsement, when most vendors will not put a measure into their system until it is endorsed. And that's just a circular logic that I think is going to be very difficult for people.
Well, this is Howard. Can I would like to read the sentence in the draft that refers to this, because it does not say that it has to be endorsed.
Right.
All it says is the